All right, there we go. I don't know why the sound guy wants the microphone on so bad. What's it his business? All right, 1 Samuel 22. We pulled out a verse last week, and I want to bring it back out. This is Proverbs 11:11, which says, "By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted." And that's what we looked at last week. Very positive spin. When somebody's got their stuff together, when somebody honors God, when they are disciplined in their behavior, it benefits everybody. But when there is evil, as we read in the second part of this verse, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. When we've got somebody who's doing the wrong things, wicked things, evil things, it affects everything and everyone. We could talk about that in the realm of government, business, church, the home. You put a wicked person in charge of anything and they will destroy it. Now, sadly, we've come to a time in our society where people applaud such things. What's that? We've got a new education reform, but for some reason, America is doing worse than it ever has in its own standardized tests. Oh my, well, I tell you what though, I like the steps they're taking with this new transgenderism thing. Well, so there we go. You know, you'll sit there and you'll talk to somebody, they'll say, well, you know, schools, they don't have enough money, they don't have enough support, they don't have enough supplies, they don't have enough resources at their fingertips. And then you tell them, you homeschool, what's wrong with you? All the violence and all the bullying and all the awful stuff, but you dare not participate in that at all. What's wrong with you? You know, I told a teacher one time, I go, well, that's just three less, or at the time it was three, that's just three less you got to worry about. That's three less you got to deal with your budget, so don't worry about us. But no, listen, you put a wicked person in charge of anything. You put a wicked person in charge of the camping trip, and you're in trouble. You know what I mean? You can't take a road trip and put someone wicked in charge and have it come out all right. And people say, well, we made it there alive. We had fun. We stopped for snacks. It just cost double what it should. And we got lost a lot. And there was a lot of fighting along the way. Now, you put someone wicked in charge and everything will be tainted by it. Why? Because it is in the very nature of the word. To do something wicked, it means a selfish thing. It means an immoral thing. Right? If you're doing immoral things, people are going to get hurt. Things will be robbed and stolen from and messed with. And we need to be, again, mindful about who we put in charge or in effect of anything. As we read here, let's go to 1 Samuel 22. We're going to begin our reading in verse 6. When Saul heard that David was discovered and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree, in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. And again, how many times have we heard about Saul with his spear in his hand? And I'll tell you what, if you just told me that a king was sitting there with his spear in his hand, I'd say, all right, I could picture that, that makes sense. But Saul has a little bit of a habit with that spear. He doesn't twiddle it. He doesn't pick at it. What does he do? He tends to throw it at people he loves and is related to. Right? He's got a problem with that spear. So he's sitting there, I mean, you're thinking, if I'm his servant, and I've seen him chuck it at one of our best generals, and I've seen him chuck it at his own son, that spear in his hand don't make me feel comfortable. Now, I tell you what, if Saul was a mighty king, if he was a man of even temperament, if he was somebody who honored God, that spear in his hand might be a comfort to me, but in this particular case, it makes me nervous all day. There he is. He's got the spear. It's almost like when you were a child coming in and your dad wasn't wearing his belt, he was hanging on to it. Kind of puts that kind of mentality in my head. Well, if he ain't wearing it, someone's getting it, right? So again, it's possibly could be seen as a very threatening gesture. What he had done is he had elevated himself while the work of the kingdom needed to be done. He was dealing with this grudge. While the necessities
of things that should be taking place for the good of the nation, he was playing games with his own prejudice. He didn't like David. He wanted to catch David. He was chasing David through. But where should a king be? A king should be about his business. Now, this was no vacation. This took some time. As a matter of fact, Saul spent much of his time as king. Too much of his time as king, hunting one man. Could you imagine what more work could be done? I think about that in our modern day politics. You vote in a senator, you vote in a representative, we vote in a president. The last year of that politician's career or their term, what do they do with it? They go out there wandering around, hey, vote for me, vote for me. They've got rallies all over the place. And it makes you wonder, well, why did I hire you in there for 3 years or 1 year and you get to take the other year off just playing around, hoping people want you again? When I see Saul doing this, that's exactly what I see. He's trying to secure his kingdom, but what good is the kingdom if the king isn't on the throne? If the king isn't doing business, if he's not sitting there putting down judgment, what is he doing? He has laid all of that aside for his own ill temper. When we see this in politics, it should disturb us. When a person reaches a title because they feel they deserve it and not because they want to do the best they can with it, we have a problem. When we see that within the churches, we have the same problem. I have met men who wanted to be pastor, and one of them, he gave me this exact answer, because it is the highest position in a church you can have. I've heard other people say, because I want my dad to be proud of me. Because my grandpa would kick my tail if I did not. These are not good causes to take up the pastorate. Because you want the attention, because you want the power. I'll tell you this, there shouldn't be too much power. Now, there should be respect, there should be deference to the pastor, but there is no power here. The church votes together. In the end, when it comes down to it, that's what it is. Trying to put that bulletin together, it doesn't have to be me. You know, I've heard of some churches where every color and everything has to be checked off by the pastor. I'm not that kind of guy. If it gets done, it gets done. Right now, I want it done right. I'll veto some things. I'll say, hey, I don't like that. That's not going to fit the Lord. But there's always going to be a biblical explanation for it. Or it doesn't quite fit into what we're trying to do. But if you're seeking power, I've seen some do that. Well, I'm going to give X amount of money to the church, and then the church has to add me on as a deacon. I want you to grab a hold of your word of the Bible, and I want you to tell me, where in the Bible does it say that deacon is an authoritative position in the church? And then I also want you to look into the qualifications of a deacon and tell me where giving large sums of money is one of them. It's not. As a matter of fact, that kind of seeking power is one of the things that those qualifications say that person can't be a part. Because your desire is wrong. What is the purpose of any role we have here in a church? A Sunday school teacher, what is their purpose? To teach. Right? The treasurer, the clerk, they each have exact definitions of what their job is. And we've even got an instruction manual for how to run the things back there. What is the purpose of a title? To fulfill the work that is necessary. Wicked people, they see these leadership spots. And they see a hill they can be the king of. That's not how it works. As a matter of fact, things will grind to a screeching halt if someone like Saul gets in charge of something. Verse 7, then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? that all of you have conspired against me. And there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse. And there is none of you that is sorry for me or showeth unto me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day. Now I want you look over at David. What was David doing? David was bringing in the disenfranchised. He was gathering them together. He was writing songs to the Lord out there. He was doing worshipful things. He was protecting his family. What's Saul doing? Well, we find him where we often find him, sitting under a spear, and now he's moaning to his servants. Now, you guys are so mean. You didn't tell me that my son got into league with this my enemy. And you guys didn't know. Is he going to give you lands? Is he going to make you captains? Whew. Is that the purpose of it? The purpose of a servant in the court is to help serve the people. Is it not? The purpose of any position within a church is to serve the Lord. Right? They had a king, but that king was still to humble himself before God. Saul wasn't humbled. As a matter of fact, he was whining. He was making accusations. How come none of you told me my son had turned against me? Well, Saul, since you're as bad of a dad as you are a king, you should have known. You should have known. If you had any kind of relationship with your son, if you didn't throw a spear at him in the middle of court, well, then maybe you'd know. Maybe you'd be the one to tell us that he made friendships with David. And he says, hey, which one of you? Huh? He really puts it out there. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him victuals, and he gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. I want us to take a look at the crimes that Ahimelech's being accused of. He prayed for David, he fed him, and he gave him a tool that he needed. None of those were illegal. None of them were illegal. If I told you that yesterday some poor mother broke down in our parking lot, she had a flat tire, and I went out there and I gave her some of my lunch, and I gave the kids some candy, and I went out there and I changed her tire and I sent her on her way, would any of you sit there and say, well, how dare you? That'd be a natural thing to do. And we got to understand there's something here that Saul doesn't realize. David lied about why he was here. Ahimelech pretty much thought that he was here serving both Saul and David. So he thought David had, Saul sent David out and he was on a secret mission. So all he did was give tools to the king's labor, give food to his labor, and prayed for him. These are not severe crimes. But as we'll see in Saul's mind, that's enough to kill him. To kill him, the rest of the priests, and the entire town. So when I say that he elevated himself, I want you to see just how high he put himself. Because the priest prayed for somebody he didn't know was my enemy, nobody could have known, gave him food and a sword, he thought it was okay to kill that man, the priests in the temple, and the entire city. Saul is far gone. We've talked about the moment where he lost his mind. We talked about the moment where he really comes into evil. And there's no returning after this. He had so elevated himself up. Whenever I look over and I see a corrupt system, whether it's a city with some bad leaders, a church with some bad leadership, whenever I look into that and I look at the person, there's at least one person in there, and I look at them, that has completely gone off the rails. They've lifted themselves up above their station. They've lifted themselves up above the responsibility, and they've given themselves more authority than they should. And that is always a very dangerous thing. And Saul proves to us just how dangerous it can be. I mean, think about how many people were harmed in war by somebody who disobeyed orders. What about how many cities have suffered because their leaders got greedy and did horrible things? Anybody remember Kwame Kilpatrick? That was that mayor down in Detroit. By the time they busted him, he was using city money to fund all manner of debauchery. His wife had a car. You could probably trade the car he bought his wife, that big old thing, right, for my mortgage. You probably could have sold that thing, paid off my mortgage, the car he bought her on the city's dime. He was a corrupt man. Now you tell me, during his mayorship, was the city doing well? No. It was already in decline, but they hit the gas on the way down. Terrible, terrible things. And I'll be honest with you, from just looking at the politics of it now, I don't think it's gotten any better. You get selfish-minded people who have more pride than sense, you're going to have a mess. Hey, what about, did you guys hear this? Was it last week, maybe 2 weeks ago? I wrote it down. It was a city council member who was talking to the police chief. And the city council member accused the police chief of covering something up. And the police chief said, though you do this, you accuse a lot of people of covering things up. And the city council member goes on and goes, well, you think I'm hiding women, I'm hiding dope. And then he says this, on video, says this, I can talk about some of what I think you don't want to come out in a public meeting in one of the most struggling cities Michigan has ever had. You tell me what's behind those doors. I don't know what, but I know what its nature is. It's wickedness. It's wickedness. If you've got somebody so bold as to declare that on a recorded session, you know it's got to be horrible in the back. Because a lot of times, people are prim and proper till it gets too bad. And all of a sudden, those leaks start coming out. What a mess. So we see that in cities. We see that in churches where you've got a leader who's so full of himself, he forgets the purpose of why he is there. He put himself over God. Remember, this isn't just, hey, how can our nation best fit godly principles? How can we follow the law? No, no. Let's go get and kill David. Why? Because God doesn't want me in the kingship anymore, and I think that guy is my replacement. That is no basis for a run there. There's no basis for business. He shouldn't be playing at this. But he is. He could have even sent some skilled men to go out and get David, but he didn't. He abandoned his job to go out and do what? Hurt the man that God had raised up. He elevated himself above God. He had been doing that. When God says you're no longer the king and you still clock in the next morning, you ain't right. You're elevating yourself above God. And that's what Saul did. He elevated himself over God. He elevated himself over the people. And he elevated himself over the job. It was no longer about the job. It was about the title. And when a person gets all about the title, they're going to make a mess with the job. Oh, I'm the manager. Oh, I'm the mayor. I'm the president. I'm the whatever. You get someone who thinks like that, things fall apart. Had a regional manager like that, he was firing people left and right for stealing. Right? He'd go in, he'd count the till, come back out, said, go over whoever it was that was handling the till that day, you're fired. There's money missing. Eventually, some of us got together and we're like, you're firing people 2-3 times a week. Are you sure you know how to count? Like, it got bad. We had a meeting in with the owner of the company. He put us all in our place. That is a family member of mine. You don't touch him. Well, he chose to fire the wrong person. And that person turns in the tapes and proves that it was that regional guy that was coming in, and he would take the money out and he would put it in his pocket. Turned out he had a cocaine addiction. And he was stealing from the company and firing all these high school kids and accusing them and saying, if you walk out silently, I won't call the cops. Well, your job is to make sure the company's making money. He lost this was Jersey Giant. He lost one or two different stores because of this guy. That guy spent some time in jail for the things that he did. But in that position, well, I keep things running. I deserve a little in my pocket there. I should be able to do that. When you've got somebody who forgets the nature of the job and they have within themselves a wicked heart, disaster is always the outcome. We used to be more mindful, more careful of the morality of people we put into office. Many of us remember, I mean, it's always been corrupt, hasn't it? A lot of people like to point to Bill Clinton, but many of you remember JFK, right? Now, that was mud in our eye, but what do people remember him as now? Oh, he was such a love. He was openly cheating with his wife, and everybody knew it. And then we find out, what about some of the policies and some of the things that he was doing some crooked things. Oh, a guy who cheats on his wife is doing crooked things at work? Oh, look about Bill Clinton, some of the dirty deals he did, and the way the Clintons came out, and who the Clintons were came out. That family? The guy who was openly having affairs in the office was doing this corrupt stuff while in office? We used to care about this stuff. Now it's what? It's what sells newspapers. I mean, you got people who write and tell the news and do podcasts and different things like that. They're just itching for someone to do something debauched and crazy so they can get some more clicks. We used to disdain that stuff. Well, you guys were just trying to make sure only certain people got in there. Right, but you and I disagree as to the value of those people. I don't want people with moral discipline issues going in and handling trillions of dollars. You know how many of those people we've got over there in Washington right now that are going through bankruptcy, and we wonder why we just added another $500 billion in debt out of nowhere? How does that happen? You put wicked people in charge of resources, and that's what happens. Well, that's kind of a rough correlation. It's not a hard one, though, is it? It may sound judgmental. It may sound mean. But if you've got somebody who's adept at hiding their taxes and adept at hiding their money, and we've got politicians who go in and it's the highest paying job they've ever had, 5 years later they come out millionaires. Hey, I'm not an economist, but I know magic money coming out of nowhere when I see it. I mean, come on, we used to care. And I tell you what, until this nation cares again about the morality, about the decision-making of its leaders, we're going to have a hard time. We're going to suffer and struggle. We want revival. I want revival. And I'm the first one to tell you that we can't legislate revival, but we've got to stop putting morally corrupt individuals in charge of the nation. We've got to stop putting them in charge of churches. We got to stop putting them in charge of city councils. We got to knock this off. We got to get to know a little bit better about them than their slogans and their jingles. Even the way we do politics today. Vote Bill 2 for schools. What about for schools? It's for schools. It'll help benefit schools. Well, what is it? It's a bill to help benefit schools. It's almost like it's almost one of those British comedian skit shows. Right? It's almost like Who's On First, but with millions of dollars tied to it. Oh, what's this for? Oh, this is for the roads. What will it do for the roads? Good. Yeah, but how? Well, you vote for it, we'll run it, it'll be good for the roads. And that's what you get out of some folks. That's what you get. And then you get a talking head who goes up there and they're going to explain all of this to us. And they put them on the news and they don't say anything different than what you can clearly see. It is a terrifying thing that we have set up. But we cannot have wickedness in high places. It'll be bad. Bad for the city. Bad for the church. Bad for the home and bad for the country. See, he elevated himself. We also see that he corrupted those in power. We look at some of these men that were around him. And what did he say? Can David give you this? Now, wait a minute. If we found out that we were elevating a Secretary of State, would we want that Secretary of State to be there because they're the best person for the job or because they were rewarded for supporting the person who just became the governor? Well, I know what I want. Every time I go through the Secretary of State, I've always come out going, man, a monkey could run it better. Every time. Going, hey, there's a problem with the sticker machine out there. Oh, well, we don't know what to do about that. Well, can I just get it through you? Oh, yeah, I guess you could. You guess I could, huh? It's kind of, it's almost comical. Right? Okay, well, here's the thing. We're going to send this to you. We've got that going on with the escape right now. I ordered it back in December. The sticker for the license plate, it hasn't come yet. I've been pulled over already. Where's your sticker? Well, I mean, I got it. I ordered it. And then this was a couple months ago, way past that time. I go, I call them. They tell me they don't know where it is and they can't send me another one just in case I'm scamming them. I go, well, as it sits right now, I've given you money. I have no product. If you were a business, I'd call the Better Business Bureau. But since you're the government, there's nothing I can do. I've always sat there. The cop ran back. He goes, all right, well, let me take a look at this. I showed him the receipt. Right, I keep the receipt. I showed him the receipt. He goes back to the car. He runs my plate. He comes up. He goes, you're right. Your car's registered. I go, oh, really? I didn't say that because I've gotten in trouble doing that in the past. But in my head, oh, really? There's only so much bail money we keep around the house now since we've had Melody. There's only so much. You know? Oh, really? I've never walked out of there going, you guys, this is a well-organized machine. Never once. I've never dealt with a government organization and come out saying this is a well-organized machine. Right? Xander and I, we managed to get through a locked door I can't remember the name of it. I'm getting too ridiculous here, but we walked right into the government building up there in Lansing. Walked right into where they were having Senate meeting. Right? Not into the actual room. They were coming out, but there was a locked door. Somebody was coming out of it. I grabbed it. We walked in. Security guard goes, what are you here for? Well, we'd like to look around. All right, go ahead. I'm sitting there thinking either I'm the right color or you're the wrong guy. Right? And even so, if I am the right color, you're the wrong guy. That's messed up, isn't it? It's messed up. We put the wrong people in charge. And we will see the wrong people being elevated under them. There should have been any one of those servants said, Saul, I know I'm putting my life on the line, but you're wrong. Now, I understand why they were afraid. Jonathan did it, and he got a spear thrown at him, so I understand. But man, where's the backbone? Well, is he going to give you land? Is he going to make you captain? You know what? If I'm a military captain, I'd like to think it's because I earned it and not because I shook the right hand the right way. I ain't no way to be. I used to hate those people at work. They were of zero value to the effort, but they got by because they sucked up to the boss. You know, well, how come that person is still here? Well, they're good friends with the boss. They go out drinking every weekend. They go out and they hang out and he's dating her daughter and blah, 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 blah. Ridiculous. We see there the beginning of the corruption. You support me in my ungodliness. You support me in my breaking the law, and I will reward you. And we have seen that countless times here in this world. If you back me, if you support me, I'll support you. And they have completely abandoned the structure. They've completely abandoned the rules. And they've turned it into something they can make a profit out of. They turned it into something they could create some kind of a living or some kind of benefit out of. There was a preacher. He published this thing, and he got really excited about a school that a church once had. Now, I don't mind a church starting a school. I do think that it is very, very dicey waters to get into. Very scary waters to get into. Because number one, half the times when a church starts a school, the person starting it doesn't have an education degree. They're just inventive. Well, a church started a school. They went into massive amounts of debt over the school. And he was faulting the pastor for closing the school. Because he felt as though the school distracted from the mainline business of the church. Now, if I'm sitting here as a pastor going, the church is suffering because of this extra biblical thing we've started, you know what I would do? I'm the pastor. The health of the church comes first. So we shut that down, right? That's what he did. This guy lampooned that pastor. And he talked about how all these school teachers lost their jobs. And how all these people who worked within it lost their jobs. Well, the school didn't have a lot of people going to it. And the church itself was paying for that school to stay aboard. And you know how they paid for that school to get opened up? The church members bought bonds. You know how they do with the government, right? Well, I give the church $10,000 with the promise that they're going to give it back one day. Well, decades later, they still didn't got that money back. Now, is that the way a church ought to be run? No, sir. That's not how a church is run. It's not. If I'm opening my wallet for something the church needs, that's the church's. That belongs to the Lord. Lord ain't ever got to pay me back. You see this? This works just fine. I've got salvation. Lord don't owe me a thing. Right? But they went above and beyond. He lampooned that pastor for putting the church above the school. That is not the purpose of a church. You wonder why that guy was so hot and bothered about it? Because he was a teacher in that church, in that school. They only asked the church what the church wanted to do. They never asked the school teachers what they wanted. Were you church members? Nope. You understand what I'm saying there? I mean, I'm sorry you lost your job, pal, but it sounds like they couldn't afford to pay you to begin with. Oh, what a mess we make when our service to the Lord, when our service to our jobs, when our service to whatever comes down to what can I get out of it? Now, don't get me wrong. I said jobs. I'm talking about our responsibilities. I told you about that time I got in trouble at a meeting, of a bunch of managers together. And they talked about paydays coming and how she had to go leave because of payday. I go, I tell you what, payday is my favorite thing we do around here. Y'all ever cancel payday? I'm out of here. Well, that doesn't sound very loyal. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse you. I'm here for the money. if you run out of it, you run out of me. I'm just, you know, just the way that works. But when it comes down to the Lord, this is what we're doing. This is what we're here for. Right? If the church runs out of the ability to support my family, I'm still a member of this church. Still the pastor of this church for as long as you'll have me. Right? That's not ever going to be a question. Those people in that, they're not my family just because I get something out of them. That's my responsibility. Those people we put into civil service, no matter what their job is, it is to fulfill the responsibility they have towards us. That is the way we ought to elect them. People who value those things. Not people who can be bought or sold. Not people whose loyalties and whose decision making can be bartered or bribed. Well, if you vote for me or you pass my bill, I'll support yours. Or if you tuck my interest into your bill, I'll support it. It's clownery. It is. It's a circus. You ever see some of those bills that get passed? Thousands of pages. Well, wait a minute. I thought this was about something very simple. Oh, no. As a matter of fact, it's about 150 things with thorough explanations that you're never going to have time to read out of before we go vote on it. It's a joke. But we see that his corruption didn't just stop at the people around him. He then goes on, verse 12. And Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." He calls Ahimelech in, and Ahimelech and all the priests, they come over, and all of Ahimelech's house. And he answered, here I am, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have ye conspired against me, that thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day?" Now, we've talked about the accusations, and I butchered my reading of it, so let me do this part again. "That he should rise against me to lie in wait." Do those seem like opposing ideas to you? Because they do to me. You know what I mean? If I go up to Brother Charlie, I say, "Brother Charlie, I've got a Nerf gun, and I'm going to sneak attack you sometime next week." That's me lying in wait, but that's not me rising up, is it? Well, you've got him rising up against me by hiding. That's not rising up against anybody. Saul, you've lost your mind. And he sits there, and Ahimelech, he gives this. He goes, "I had no idea of any of these things." And he speaks true. David lied to him for this moment. We could be honest before Saul and say, "I had no idea. All I did was pray for somebody I thought you sent, feed him, and give him a weapon for the job I thought you gave him." Ahimelech did nothing wrong. And I've already told you what he does in the next verses. He kills Ahimelech. He kills the priests in the temple. And he kills everybody in that town. That's wrong. That's murder. When the Bible says, "Thou shalt not kill," the people in that town is exactly who it's talking about. Right? There were times where God told them to stone certain individuals who committed certain crimes. That's not what that's talking about. If somebody breaks into your house and they're doing violence in your home and you shoot them, that's not what that verse is talking about. But when you go to somebody who has done no wrong and you slaughter them, everybody who works with them, their family, and the town, that's genocide. Saul had further crossed the line. Not only had he lost his mind, but now he's wiping out this entire city. Why? Because of his anger, because of his bitterness. But most importantly, because he did not value their lives. Did not value their lives. You know, we're in America, we're renowned and made fun of in other countries for our school violence. But I'll tell you this, we don't have violence in schools because of guns. Every city and country in the world has violence in their schools. You want to know why people kill each other? They don't value human life. Well, maybe it's depression. Maybe it's what they're watching back in the 90s. Maybe it's violent video games. No, it is sin in the heart coming out. Now, I believe that there are some things that can pervert judgment, sear the conscience, and mess with you. I do believe those things have an effect. But in the end, the person pulling the trigger does not value human life. They're looking for a reason to do some crazy debauched stuff. And we need to be aware of that. We need to watch out for that. But he corrupted everything. I want you to look at his plan. The first thing he did in his war against David, and really, it's important not to confuse what Saul's really up to here. Saul is not, I don't think Saul's biggest problem here is with David. I think it starts with God not wanting him. I think it's jealousy. I think the story of Saul and David is a whole lot more like Cain and Abel. God accepted you, but he doesn't accept me. And yeah, his anger was at David. Yeah, the focus of his anger was David, but his real problem was with God. That's what it was. And if Saul at any moment would have gotten right with God, this story would have never happened like this. If Saul would have got down on his knees the moment he had learned from Samuel that God had rejected him and he had stepped off the throne like God instructed him to do, we wouldn't have been here. But this is the way it must be. The thing that we want to get to here is that it's a war. When we have corruption, when we have wickedness, the first thing they go for and go after is God. Silence the churches. Silence them. Shut them down. Make people, like the serpent in the Garden of Eden, question God. Is there a God? Is that really what he said? Are you sure? Well, maybe God is dead. And they say all these things and they push all these things. Don't listen to your church. They're transphobes. They're homophobes. They're this. You can't listen to them. They're not nice. Isn't that right? That's the 11th commandment. Thou shalt be nice and forget the other 10. There's a confusion there with what compassion is. It's confusion. If I'm sitting there and I see a child out playing in the middle of the street, and I run out and I grab a hold of it and I bring it back, there's some that would sit there and say, you stopped that kid from getting hit by a car. That was very compassionate. Some would sit there and say, how dare you restrict their right to go play out in a dangerous area? And that's what we see today. That's a dangerous area you're playing in. Number one, you're ruining your body. Number two, you're ruining your future. And number three, at the end of your life, you will answer to God. I'm here to help. He left me here as a guidepost, as a light to point you in the right direction. So the wicked, man, when they get in charge, we got to shut that down. Because otherwise we can't make merchandise out of these people. We can't make money off of these people. See, we stand up against this corruption. They don't want God involved. They don't want God to be a part of it. So they shut things down. And I've often talked about that. You know, what would happen if some of the things that are happening up in Canada happened down here? Pay close attention to what's going on with churches in Canada. It didn't stop with COVID. They're doing more to shut them down up there for the stuff they're preaching about. And it's coming. For decades, preachers have been told that we are out of our minds for thinking that that would come to pass. It's not a conspiracy when they're openly talking about it, folks. Pay attention to the bills that are wandering through the Congress. I'm telling you, it's not a conspiracy. But he attacked God. He murdered God's men. And from there, we see the murder of innocent people. Now, it is not above a government to green light the murder of innocent people. Every government that's ever stood has been a part of that sort of a thing. Our current thing that we're doing is we're murdering unborn children left and right. There's that girl who's been all over the news for putting her baby in a trash can and walking away from it. And everybody, no matter where they stand on the side of the political aisle, what a terrible thing. She should go to jail. Did you know in California you got 7 days after the child's born to decide? Her biggest crime was she was in the wrong state. Her biggest crime was she didn't pay someone to do it for her. Pay attention. You didn't pay to have someone do it for you. That's the real problem. You didn't conform to this. We kill innocent people all the time, not just babies. We allow terrible things. And again, you look over out there in these cities that are giving hypodermic needles to drug addicts and then paying for someone to go and get them once they've overdosed and take them to the morgue. That's heinous, isn't it? And here we are. When we teach vain philosophies and humanistic tendencies to young children, and then we stand back and we say, why are they so anxious? Why is the suicide rate going up? Because you're giving them ladders that don't work. You're teaching them to build on platforms that cannot hold. Well, I think it's because people say that we're wrong. Raise your hand if you've ever been told you were wrong. And you survived. Look at you. You should have had more kids. If being told you're wrong puts you in that state of mind, you need to check your state of mind. You need to get that looked at. Because not everything's going to agree with you. not everything's going to go with you. So if we've got that level of weakness, it is not our job to sit there and go, well, what we need to do is stop telling them that they're wrong, and we need to give them some tools that they can actually use. Do some things that make some sense. I survived a lot based off the teachings of that word, and so have you. I've had fingers in my faces and red screaming faces right in front of mine. I've been in dangerous spots. I've been in sad places, man. I've gone through some sadness. And that book has led me every step of the way. Even while people stood there and said, your religion won't work. And my God has. In every situation. Now, if you're still sitting there thinking, I know you don't, but some think, well, you know, what happens when it doesn't work out? That's God's providence. I don't know why it's got to be that way. This is the land of the dying. We're all going to get there. You know what? Why did they die at 15 instead of 500? I don't know. It's going to happen. I've noticed this, that the atheist still dies at 15. The atheist still dies at 32. The atheist still dies at 100. With or without God, we are still in the land of the dying. You don't get to live longer because you deny the existence of God. We live in a cursed earth. So yeah, sometimes it's your time. But we don't sit there and debate his existence based off of something he told us was going to happen. Those tools, those coping mechanisms, those words of wisdom and instruction, we need those. And if we put people in charge who don't have those, we are building a very... How do I put this? So we're building a very dangerous structure. We've got a very dangerous government. When you think about this right now, Russia launches a nuke. Who here is completely happy with who we've got in the White House to stand this situation? Not me. I'd vote for Donald Trump, I would. But I'll be honest with you, if we went to war with Russia, I wouldn't want him on the button either. I'd just be nervous. He'd get into fights over stuff. He had a bit of an ego on him. He was that kid, if you dared call him a name, he'd stop and go, what'd you say? I'm just saying. He'd be too quick to go in. We got one in there now who wouldn't know what to do once he got there. And I dare deem that one day we're going to have one up there don't know what kind of flavor gender they are. I'm just saying. You don't know basic biology, but you're going to tell me about the economy and business and war? No, thank you. No, thank you. We need people who can keep it together. That's why when we vote right. When we make decisions as a church, we scrutinize. We wouldn't want somebody wicked, you know? If we hired a contractor and we found out he was peddling drugs on the side, we're not using that person no more. Am I right? Be careful with the wickedness we allow. But not just in around us, but us. If you allow wickedness into your life, you have become the Saul. You open yourself up to being like Saul. Because as I've always said, sin will always do what sin does. And that is corrupt absolutely. Pray, Heavenly Father, Lord, we owe our actions and our behaviors to you. So, Father, as much as we can sit there and rattle on about the government, rattle on about other churches, Lord, let it never be true for us that we have a wicked heart. Lord, it's not our wicked mouth or not our wicked ways that pervert judgment in this church or in our own lives. Father, help us to stand in the upright way. Help us to be a helper to those that need it and a citadel of truth, preaching and proclaiming your word. Lord, that ought to be our destiny. That ought to be our drive. Not power, not influence, not any of the things that this world wants. But Lord, help us to be right by you instead. For it's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.